I've got audio recording at home here, and I've got audio recording through Luminate, and so I needed to sync them up nicely. I hope that worked anyways. I know I'm definitely recording, so we'll see what happens. and if all else fails, I'll be asking you for the recording. Thanks, everyone, for coming out this evening. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you lending some of your valuable course time to listen to me speak. I confess, as I was telling Alec before the start of this, that my presentation changed completely in the hours preceding the actual delivery of the presentation. I had in mind to do one thing, and I ended up doing something completely different. So it's a bit experimental. I think it'll work. It's going to depend a lot on you guys, though. So you can't really multitask during this one. I'm going to hope for a lot of participation on your part, because in honesty, I didn't finish my slides, and so you're all going to have to finish them for me. That said, let me give you a few introductory remarks, and then we'll launch into the body of the presentation as a whole. So I want to begin a little bit with where I'm coming from, because the title of the presentation is the role of the educator in the PLE world. And, you know, as they say in the cartoons, I is one. That's the work that I've been doing predominantly for the last 10 years, 15 years or so, is as an educator in the PLE world. And if you don't believe me, take a look at some of the work that I do. I've been developing online software designed to deliver education in the PLE world, such as Grasshopper, Synergique, which is something we did with Desire to Learn, Plurn, which is personal learning environment software, and other stuff over the years. In addition, with people like George Siemens and Dave Cormier and Rita Kopp, I've taken part in offering a series of online courses, distributed online courses, such as Connectivism and Connective Knowledge, 08 and 09, Critical Literacies, and the Personal Learning Environments, Networks, and Knowledge, or PLINK course. That's just wrapping up this week, in fact. And these courses are known collectively as MOOCs, M-O-O-C, which stands for Massive Open Online Course. So they are instantiations of learning in this PLE world. I've also been theorizing a lot around the idea of connective knowledge and learning communities. I've written a whole bunch of papers on that. Some of them have even been published. And as Alec mentioned, I've been writing OL Daily for more than 10 years. I give talks. I attend conferences. I've been attending the Global Education Conference that's online these days. And for me, that's input, input, input. I've been listening to thousands of voices on this subject. The approach to learning in a PLE world emphasizes open learning. It emphasizes learner autonomy. It is not focused on course content. Course content is merely a tool, or as I say in some of my presentations, a MacGuffin, a device to support learning rather than the object of learning. This approach promotes a pedagogy of learning by engagement and activity within an authentic learning community. It fosters a wider and often undefined set of competencies associated with a discipline. You can see I didn't quite finish that sentence there. The idea being here that to learn a discipline is not to learn simply a set of facts associated with a discipline. It's to learn as well all the stuff that comes between the facts. You learn not just the sentences, but the space between the sentences. You learn how to do the problems at the end of the chapter, as Thomas Kuhn would say. You learn tacitly, as Michael Pollenier would say. This approach think treats learning as exercises in activities requiring those competencies. And it treats knowledge not as something as transfer or construction or acquisition, but rather as growth, much like growth of muscles that you acquire through exercise. Now, in this approach, a major underlying theme that I've never really articulated is that the role of the educator will change dramatically. Back in 1998, when I wrote The Future of Online Learning, I said at that time that the role of the educator would be unbundled. It would be taken apart. The task of teacher would splinter into a dozen different tasks. The instructor is not anymore a sage on the stage, but neither is the instructor merely a guide by the side. The instructor is something in between those two points, or more than those two points. And the reason for this is, while students are engaged in these authentic tasks, in these authentic environments, they need to be able to look at models or prototypes on which to base their own work. So the instructor can't just be passive. The instructor has to take an active role in the disciplinary or professional community, demonstrating tactics and techniques, modeling the approach, modeling the language, and the worldview of a successful practitioner. So, my presentation today was originally going to segue now. I was going to spend a lot more time on those first few slides and then segue into some examples of the different sort of approaches that characterize learning today. Instead of just throwing a few links at you, you can follow them for yourself. They're actually all from today's newsletter. Free video lectures, which is a fascinating site consisting of courses of videos. I saw one, Cognitive Neuroscience or something like that. There's 22 lectures in cognitive neuroscience. It looks fascinating. I'm actually going to go through that one. But if you think about it, what is the role of the teacher or the instructor when the student's got 22 video lectures in cognitive neuroscience? Producing another 22 lectures in cognitive neuroscience, probably not so useful anymore. Another one is from a presentation today, Roots and Shoots, which is the Jane Goodall Institute, and it's organized around campaign learning. And the idea is that students from around the world get together, identify ecological or environmental issues or projects that they want to work on, and then undertake these campaigns. Well, there's not so much room for traditional teaching and that sort of thing. Related to this is the concept of challenge-based learning. And there's a page there, it's actually from Apple, which describes this approach. Or something that I've been working on. Excuse me. There we go. I have just burped on international radio. How professional. Is something called serialized courses. This is something that Tony Hurst has worked on and talked about, and I've worked on. I'm not sure if this website is up at the moment, but I'll put it up again. And the idea here is that the software takes you week by week through the course. It throws you together with a cohort, and it provides you with resources, facilitates discussion, does all of that for you, and you can start these pretty much any time. And it's just you're taking it with whomever happens to be taking this course at this time. Serialized courses, serialized feeds is also a heading under which I put it. The idea is that the entire course is driven by an RSS feed generator. Well, you know, those are the sorts of things that I look at a lot and I think about a lot in the course of my day-to-day activity. Every day, you know, I subscribe to hundreds, more than 1,000 feeds, about 500 or 600 educational technologists and educators, along with a bunch of cyber culture stuff, media stuff, etc., design stuff. And so I see examples like this day after day after day. And I relate these examples to my own experience as an online educator. And so what this does is, yeah, there was a presentation about using free resources in education. I think I might have been at that one as well. Actually, there were probably a dozen presentations about using free resources in education, but I'll leave that aside. So I was thinking about the different roles that an educator is and relating these to my own experience. So I think this is where I am in the presentation. I'm going to now... Oh, right. I wanted to say this one thing. I was also, just before the talk, reading instead of preparing. Sorry about that. So I was reading Danielle's blog post. I read the three blog posts that Alex linked to. And I noted what Danielle wrote about children learning technology. They're just children that copy what adults do. That's mostly how people learn, is by copying. And there's in the IEEE publication, Learning Technology, which also came out today, there was a really beautiful model here of integration of basically newbies into a programming community. And the diagram describes what Danielle described from the perspective, from my perspective of learning as mastering a discipline by authentic practice or experience in that discipline. On the left, we have average low-level users, and they use. On the right, we have average users of software, they just use. On the left, we have senior makers, service providers, etc. And in the middle, what we might call co-designers. And typically what would happen is, over a lifetime, a person will gradually migrate from the left to, from the right to the left. Now they'll graduate from being average users to co-designers to sense makers, service providers, etc. And, you know, they don't do this for every community in which they're a part, but they do this for some community in which they're a part. And this process is the process of becoming proficient in that discipline. But you notice that in this diagram, all three of those stages are related to each other. There's a lot of contact and a lot of influence going on between one and the other. So there's this constant interactive process happening here. It's not like you go out and first you do some learning and then you do some practitioning. Quite the opposite. You're doing your learning and your practitioning in the same time and in the same place. From day one, you're an active practitioner in the field. And in education, I believe quite literally, we should be thinking of students from day one as active practitioners. And by day one, I mean like the first day they're in kindergarten. We should be thinking of them as active practitioners. Obviously not very professional, probably not even very responsible, but not separate. And, oh, did I give you that example? Oh, I don't think I did. Oh, rats. There's a brilliant example from my newsletter today. Of the polar bear scientists in Churchill, Manitoba. And basically they're doing live feeds of their work in Churchill about polar bears and making that available to schools everywhere. Well, making it available to everyone everywhere. And so here we have these, you know, eminent scientists, the world's leading experts in polar bears, communicating directly with children. And these children can do things that actually help, yeah, thank you, Alec, that's it, Polar Bears International, can actually do things to help these scientists. So they are connected. All right, that's the preamble. So what I've done is I enlisted the help of people on Twitter, and I was actually going to grab a screen capture of that and put it here. So pretend there's a screen capture here instead of this picture of it, of the conversation on Twitter. And basically, I put out a bunch of things that I thought were roles based on my own experience and asked people if they thought the list was complete, and they added a few things, and eventually we came up with the list. So what I'm going to do now is, for the remainder of this presentation, I'm going to go through the list of roles of educators in a PLE world. And you can go through the conversation, as Alex points out, with the Twitter link there. And basically, what I'm going to ask you to do, because I thought about this, and I thought, well, yeah, okay, I could write a pithy little description for each role, but I thought it would be a lot more interesting if you did that. So I've got a slide for each role, and what I'm going to ask you to do, as I reflect on my experience in that role, because I won't stop gabbing, because that's what I'm here to do. But I want you to put in, just type in, use the text input onto the whiteboard, and type in your answers to three questions about that role. First of all, what is the role? What do you think the role is? And we'll see how that fleshes out as we go. The second thing is, can you think of examples of that role? And then third, because this is important, the question is, who does this? Because this is the point about the role of the educator. The role of the educator has blown up. So has the educator. Not literally, but thankfully, because that would be, well, not good. But it's no longer one person doing this stuff anymore. It's a multitude of people doing this stuff. So it's not the educator, it's educators. And so we may have to invent some position descriptions. We may have to identify the role being fulfilled by people who are already out there, only known as something different. So we'll go through that. And so we'll identify the role, examples, and who does it. And that'll be my slides. And then I will take your comments. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a screenshot of each of these screens, replace my original slide with that screenshot, and that will be my slideshow for this session. That'll be the one that I actually post on SlideShare, because if I just post the one I've got now, it'll be kind of boring. So, and how many of these are there? I'm sure you're asking that. I'm not sure exactly, but it's about 15 or so, maybe more. So, the first role, and here you can see now the sample format. And they're all going to look like this. So, what is it? All right, so think, just type in there what you think it is to be a learner from the perspective of an educator. Some examples, maybe, and who does it? And somebody's already typed in, excellent, everyone. And the reason why I put in the learner is because I find, as an educator, my primary role is to learn things. And the reason why I learn things is because things keep changing. Even look at the field of education itself. It has changed dramatically over the last 10 years, 15 years. It certainly changed a lot since I was in school. I also find that I have to continually learn, because being able to function in this world isn't a case of acquiring the knowledge of the discipline. Rather, it's a case of watching the discipline and then reacting to the changes. Douglas Rushkoff talked about surfing on waves. You have to be constantly observing the wave to surf on the wave. So what is it to learn? We've got being inquisitive, analyzing, absorbing, exploring, building memories, being a smart person, that's interesting. Some examples, tutors and professors, learning about learning, meta-learning, a lifelong inquiry, that's a great example. Somebody put partnership, it sort of scrolls off the end of the screen there, I'm sorry. Who does it? Everyone. It takes a whole village to raise a child, quite true in my opinion, because the child copies, right? And the child doesn't just pick who he or she copies. The child copies everyone. That's why it takes a whole village to raise a child, because the child is copying the whole village. See what else. Experimenting with producing has to be engaged. Someone who wants to know. Getting excited about new stuff. Yeah, I like that. Students are learners, but also teachers. Yeah. Okay, experimenting with producing. Okay, that's excellent. That's exactly the kind of response that I wanted to get from all of you. So I'm going to do a capture of this screen. It's going to take just a second here because I'm not optimally set up. Okay, put that down there. Okay, capture. This is your last chance. Get it in now. Quickly. Okay. Okay. And that's the learner. Okay. I'm just going to crop this so I don't blow up my memory halfway through my presentation. So, you get the idea, right? First role of educator is as a learner, and yeah, I really think that pretty much everybody in the system is involved in this. That's just the first role. The next role is the collector. And I find that this is one of my primary educational activities. This is a bit distinct from being a learner, because I collect stuff I already know. Examples, my son, I love it. and I collect not just information, but I collect artifacts. That's why the little cartoon there, I wanted some guy collecting bugs, because, you know, that's part of it. Me, I collect photographs. I collect links to interesting posts. I collect contacts. I collect memories. Yeah, that's quite true. The idea here is that an educator is a gatherer of good stuff, right? And if you think about it, especially in the lower grades, it's almost as though in this ideal world, the educator is gathering one thing after another to present to students. And there's all kinds of resources, especially these days, there's all kinds of resources out there. And the idea here is to collect these things. I find aggregation, to use a more technical term, is a huge part of the work that I do. I use, as I mentioned, Google Reader to aggregate, and I spend a lot of time reading all of the stuff that I collect. And I find that I probably could not function as an educator without that. So what have we got now? Examples, my son, me, librarian. Yeah, I'm really glad somebody put librarian in there, because on the Twitter discussion, nobody actually responded librarian as one of the roles. But I think part of the function of a librarian is a collector. At the top, we are doing it right now. I love when people go meta and put it way at the top. Being a collector is one of the roles of a librarian. Somebody gave the guy hair. Gladwell's something. Maven. Yeah, that's a really good example. Who does it? I can hardly find. Oh, there it is. Everyone, again, a curator, especially preservationist. Elders, that's a great example. Now, because one of the major things that you can collect are experiences. And the people who have the most of those are elders. There are studies that have been done, I wish I could remember the reference to it, that suggest that people get more value out of their money by spending it on experiences rather than possessions. And I think that that's true. I know that's a little offside. Journaling, that's a great example. Collecting your own thoughts, your own ideas. Certainly that's something that I try to do. And one of the reasons why I write prolifically is I'm constantly trying to collect what I write. Okay, I'm going to save this screen. The screen is saved. Pens down. Just kidding. But really, it's saved. And I'm going to crop it here in PaintShop Pro. Image, crop to selection. Okay, that's collector. Great. Who does it? Again, everyone. Yeah, pretty much everyone. A connected learner. Next is the curator. I know somebody put curator under collector, but I think these are different roles. And I've had conversations back and forth with George Siemens about whether curation is a partner or a part of being an educator. I love the way Alex is tossing URLs into the chat area. That's fantastic. And Linda's asking, Alex, how do you know all this stuff? Well, he's taught this course before. He's been collecting. Just kidding. From my perspective, yeah, doing what Stephen does, yeah, the curator is somebody who doesn't simply collect, but somebody's just put it in there, is an organizer, is a custodian, is a guide, the custodian of a collection. Exactly. See, it's not simply the collecting of things, it's actually the putting of things into the context of each other. I often, when I'm doing my newsletters especially, but also in the online courses, I often find myself putting things in a sequence. This, then this, then this. My newsletters, they never officially have a theme, but they often have an emergent theme where I've just taken a bunch of things and put them together. Today's is kind of like that, because today's I was thinking about this presentation, so I collected stuff that would go around this theme. So we got the newsletter that looked like this theme. So we got the example of the librarian again. It's really hard to think of another example, isn't it? But of course, there's somebody can put this in. The museum curator, of course, I think is a very good example of that. The guru, an actual curator, thank you. Somebody's put in WordNet Web. Princeton.edu. Yeah, that's really good. And there's also a site that I know, WordNIC. I saw a presentation from the founder of WordNIC a few weeks ago. And I really like WordNIC, because what WordNIC does is not only collects all uses of individual words, it then takes what it knows and presents it so that it extracts the definition, shares the definition, and then shares examples of how that word is used. I use WordNIC all the time. I don't use other dictionaries anymore. I use WordNIC because WordNIC is for dictionaries what CoBuild is for grammars. It's a study of how words are actually used. And, I forgot what her name is. Erin something. Said basically, there is no right definition for a word. The word is defined by the way we use that word. I thought, great, somebody's quoting Wittgenstein in a presentation, and it's not me. All right. Instructional designer is a good example of a curator as well. Very good, CoBuild. You're familiar with CoBuild, aren't you? I can tell. I'm one of these people, just as an aside, I'm one of these people who read the CoBuild grammar for leisure. That's kind of sad, actually, but it's a fascinating read. Anyhow, okay, I'm going to capture this screen. How is it going so far? Do you like this format? Is this working for you guys? Fun. Yes, great, fun, good, cool. Because, you're not talking, it's just me talking, but you are feeding back. And the reason for that is because this would be impossible to manage with you talking as well. I'd actually have to have somebody else manage the discussion. Even just, capturing the screens and storing them and watching what's happening on them is a trick. So Lisa says, don't worry, we're happy. Co-creating. Great. Okay, good. And Ola Bakri, ever enigmatic with guess that's how it's pronounced. All right, next role. You're getting a feel for how education, how being an educator has changed, though. Oh, and who does it? People with passion, instructional designer, experts, connoisseurs. Yeah, those are great examples. Next role, the alchemist. This one was submitted by Barbara Chu on Twitter, and actually her first example of the alchemist was the cook. And then I'm thinking of Paul. Okay. I've thought almost immediately of the educator as DJ, as Brian Lamb has been known to talk about. Basically, it's the mixing together, or the remixing, if you will, of the resources that you found, that you've curated. And resources here, I use resources very broadly, right? Resource can be anything. Anything you can give a URL to is a resource. And what do you give a URL to? Everything. So we've got a little overlapping text there. Somebody will move that, though I'm sure. The alchemist hates science but wants results. That's a funny thing about alchemy. Because it's almost like an intuitive mixing of things. There's the concept in William Gibson's work of the Idoru, the intuitive perceiver of patterns. This is almost like the converse of that. It's almost like the intuitive creator of patterns. You look at the cook, and no professional cook in the world measures. Well, that's not true, Corey. Of course they measure, but they wouldn't have to. And they know cooking so well that they just blend, and it looks like magic. It looks like it's very non-scientific, but the scientific, it's so scientific, it has gone beyond scientific, if that makes any sense. Now, the alchemists thought that they were doing that. Of course, they were shysters and sometimes crooks. So, but, you know, we sort of reconceptualized the concept of the alchemist today. Examples of alchemist, Stephen Downs, thank you. Examples, remix, mod. Somebody should put in mashups in there. The whole concept of the mashup is an alchemist. And, you know, it's this taking of things, putting them in juxtaposition, blending them, that creates something new. I really do think that's a key role for educators. And those of you who are teachers in the classrooms, I think you'll know exactly what I mean. You're standing in front of that class, and you're weaving together examples from the text, examples from real life, examples from the things that are happening right in the classroom in front of you. And you're trying to blend that together to produce an educational experience. The same kind of thing happens in an online PLE kind of world. Adapt, synthesize in a meaningful, personal way. That's an excellent way of putting it. We've got one here that's going to kind of disappear on the screen capture. Oops, can't do anything with that pointer. Oops, oh, I can't scroll. I'm trying to read this comment, but okay, there we go. Taking something kids says is way off base and making it relevant. Yeah, I like that. That's pretty good. Girl talk. Yeah, students without fear. Everybody has some ingredient to realize the perfect recipe. Yeah, what do you make for dinner? Whatever's in the cupboard. Believe me, I've learned that one. Risk-taking, blending, students without fear, turning ordinary into gold. Exactly, turning the ordinary into gold. And on that note, and thank you for the person who's coloring these. That's very creative. I never would have thought of that. I'm going to print this screen. I've got it printed. I'll save it. And now I'm cropping it to selection. These are going to be really good slides. People are going to love these. Crop to selection. That's image 5. So, all right, moving right along here. The programmer. I find myself doing this, and if I'm doing it, it's part of the role. When I'm saying programmer, I sometimes mean that in a very literal sense. I mean actually getting in there and writing code. Now, I know a lot of educators don't get in there and write code, but, you know, writing software is writing logic. It's writing, as the first person put in there, it's writing process. It's writing method. You know, there's this area in online learning called learning design, and there's the IMS learning design specifications. And what that is intended to be is a programming logic for online learning. Now, it's not a very good programming logic for online learning because it's very mechanical, it's very linear, but still the concept of the educator as programmer plays a role here. Programming creates environments. Programming creates artifacts that have capacities, that have affordances. Programming creates a responsive, I'm going to say environment again, but creates conditions under which the learners can take part in activities and get responses. What do I program? Well, I mentioned one of the things, the serialized courses. Excuse me. One of the functions of creating serialized courses is writing the software that will deliver that instruction, you know, in a certain time sequence over 10, 15 weeks or whatever. And educators in the classroom do that now. It's just they do it manually with course outlines and syllabuses and curriculum. But in the future, that role, that actual mechanical process of delivering these resources, delivering these activities, will be a programming task. I love how that screen glows. I'm not sure about the orange legs, though. Oh, well. So what have we got? Process listing commands, creating a framework, creating an analytical framework. Key resource to translate needs to online solutions, smart person again. Educational designer, certainly that's a part of it. I like this, sequential scaffolds, building scaffolds. Given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow. I think that probably will follow under who does it, right? So who does it? Anyone who's developing course materials, computer science people, authors, writers, and publishers. Writing is a kind of programming. Just as an aside, I think anyone who learns to program will be a better writer because they won't drop punctuation anymore, and they'll have a clear sense of actions, of verbs, of nouns, of variables, and the structure and logic. And they'll write for purpose and outcome. Who else does it? Microsoft tries to, yes, software company. You know, a lot of people that we wouldn't consider educators in a traditional world are now fulfilling educational functions. Look at that journal that I cited today, the IEEE Learning Technology. IEEE, International, it's something, 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 engineers, existentialists, just kidding. You know what I mean? Alec probably knows what it stands for. These are engineers and computer technicians, and they're writing a learning technology journal. Think about that. You know, can you imagine that engineers would have been writing educational programs 40 years ago, 50 years ago? Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. Thank you, Alec. He did know it. Fast Googler, yeah. software developers, open source community. Yeah, you know who's missing in that under who does it? Somebody can put it in. Learners, your students. Your students can probably write better software than you can. Count on it. Left brain thinker. That's interesting. There's some dispute about whether programming is a left brain. Well, not that there's anything to left brain, right brain, but anyhow, we'll leave that aside. All right, I'm going to capture this one now that the diagram is completely colored. It's almost like a timer. Okay, print screen. I've captured the screen. And I'm going to save the screen. Oops. And I'm going to crop the screen correctly, I hope. Cropping. And image, crop to selection. If only you can see, well, it's pretty boring, actually. So, all right, next roll. I wasn't sure about this one, but it came in on Twitter, and I couldn't come up with a good enough argument against it. And I suppose that there is a role of the salesperson in education. Now, what are they selling? I think is a very interesting question. Certainly, people have accused me, not without justice, of having an agenda, having a message, being more than just someone who describes technology, but somebody who is pretty quick to leap on the advocate's bandwagon. I consider that as part of the work that I do. So therefore, I guess part of my work as an educator is sales. Not so much sales in the sense of getting money for stuff, because, well, I don't really need money for stuff. Well, I need some money, otherwise I would die. But you know what I mean. But selling ideas, selling concepts. I think schools and education systems in general have a major role of selling culture. It's interesting, you just heard the clock chime behind me, and that tells you what culture I belong to, interestingly. I love this definition, a big talker who will not do the project. Yeah, there's a lot of that in sales, isn't there? But more positively, champion of a cause, product, or idea. And if you read the business literature, you'll read that, you know, every project needs a champion. It's one of the feeds that I read is Harvard Business Review. Every day, at some point in time during the day, you can hear me muttering to myself because I've been reading Harvard Business Review and I'm angry again. But that's one thing that they say that is kind of true, I think. Examples, teachers, yes. Selling tech to the higher-ups, yeah, although I reject the concept of higher-ups, but that's a different issue. Advertising, obviously. Motivator, sell tech to parents, yeah. Changing minds of those who are set on one idea, absolutely. It's interesting, nobody's put in any of the cultural activities, singing, plays, drama, a lot of these things aren't just mindless entertainment. A lot of these things actually are trying to propagate a concept or an idea. Even if it's just love, 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 it's still some sort of promotion of a concept or an idea. Motivator is pretty good. Who does it? Political left-wingers who have too much time on their hands. Administration, teachers, too much to say. Okay. I resemble that remark. Okay, we've also got a teacher who gives breath. Okay, is there more? No, just that. Sometimes we have to sell her. I'm not sure where that was going. Some e-learning gurus, yeah, we won't mention any names. Principal sells to staff, absolutely. You cannot lead by direction alone. If your staff are not sold on the idea, the staff will not follow. Let's say the old line, a leader needs the followers as much as the followers need the leader. So positive energy, authentic persuasion. There was a discussion in one of the talks at the Global Education Conference. I hope I'm getting the name of that conference right. That's what I think of it as anyways. about the role of keynotes and the suggestion that a lot of people simply want keynotes at conferences to repeat what they already agree with and pump them up. And I thought about that, and I think that is a valid role for keynotes. Certainly I've seen myself in that role sometimes, the role being to restate what they believe and to reinforce what they believe and to sell them on the concept that they already believe. It's kind of an interesting, it's really easy to sell people on concepts that they already believe, but it's still an art. Okay, so, oops, my little keyboard foot has collapsed here. All right, print screen, innovators. I caught that right at the last minute there. So I'll save this screen and crop to selection. All right, so that's number 7. Excuse me. Another role. I have no idea how to pronounce your name, Ola. Ola Bakri, okay. A TED talk about putting people in tribes. Yeah, I think the TED talks are an awful lot about sales and the sales of an idea, the sales of a way of looking at the world. But anyhow, that's an old topic. On to the new topic. Obviously, there is a role of the educator as a convener. It used to be that role was done by the government. The government said, you will go to school, you will go to this school, and you'll go in this class, and lo and behold, the students were convened. It's not like that anymore. Not even in, the kindergarten to grade 12 world, because, you know, there are many more educational opportunities out there. And certainly in places that have been underserved educationally, people are creating their own opportunities. A huge part of life in rural Saskatchewan. Absolutely, yeah. And not just rural Saskatchewan. I used to live in rural Manitoba just down the road. And it's a big, huge part of life there as well. People, excuse me, I'm not going to say they learn better in groups, although a lot of people would say that. But people often prefer to learn in groups and are more comfortable learning in groups. They feel more motivated, etc., which means that there needs to be some way to create these groups. And, you know, there's a long discussion about, you know, what sort of groups that you create, what are the dynamics of those groups, how do you motivate the groups, how do you lead the groups, all of that. And I'll leave that a bit to the side for now, and identify simply here the role of the forming of the group, the bringing together of people. It's partially the way Alec brought people together here for this session. It's partly the way I brought people together on Twitter to contribute to the writing of this session. NMC, says Lisa, did this today with their new Navigator program. I'm assuming NMC acted as conveners. Is that what you're saying? I assume it is. So what is it? It's a network builder. It's a collector of people. It's Mickey Rooney saying, let's put on a show. That's a great example. It's a motivator, an organizer, a DJ. Absolutely. And now some examples, professional development, facilitators, teachers, mentors. I'm just dying to put community organizers on there. Who does it? Again, you know, like I said, it used to be the government did it, right? It's a network weaver, perhaps, a person with vision. Thank you for putting community organizers. It's interesting that the volume of posts on this slide is a bit lower. It's a more nebulous aspect of being an educator, isn't it? IT people, coaches, text messaging for charity. Yeah, one of the blogs that I read without fail is Beth Cantor's blog on using social networking for nonprofits. And Alec will know the URL for that and put it into the chat area. Project participants do it, even kids. Absolutely, Stephen. Yeah. One of the things, and again, this is one of the examples that I saw the that I mentioned at the start of the course, the James et al. Institute project. The students organize themselves. They pick their project, they gather themselves together, they decide what they're going to do, and then they do it. They convene themselves, and I think that's a really important component. The Godall Institute provides a certain amount of support and context for the organization, but the participants in the project convene themselves. They convened the group to do a beta test, showed the tech, got 18 volunteers immediately. Yep, that's how it works. Alec, I didn't realize you were gone. Sorry, we're looking for a link to Beth Cantor's blog, please. Oh, Shelley Wright's got it. Thank you, Shelley. Okay, so I'm going to capture this slide, the convener, print screen now. Thank you for the nice, colorful writing. And put this over here. And define my area to crop. And it has been cropped. Image, crop to selection, and that's number 8. But we have many, many more roles for educators, don't we? I won't go too much longer. If I run out of time before I run out of roles. I'm sorry about your audio. That's you, not me, right? I hope it is. Okay. So, the coordinator. The coordinator is... the coordinator... Funny that was the first color to go on the diagram. It's more than the convener, right? Now, the coordinator is not the commander. Even in companies... And I've learned this from experience. We do a lot of work with the private sector and NRC, so I have a lot of experience working in these sorts of environments, even in the military. Yes, you can command the soldiers to jump, and they will say how high, but if you want the soldiers to win a war, you can't command them. You have to coordinate them. And, yeah, it's... That's an interesting definition. Bringing groups or things together for the common good, scheduling, setting expectations, the juggler. I think of project management. I do a lot of project management in my work. More on the behind-the-scenes stuff, more for the development of software and things like that. It's an agonizing but unavoidable part of doing any sort of development work. If you're an educator, you're a project manager. The projects you're managing may be the projects being done by your students, maybe class plays, it may be soccer teams, it may be field trips, but there's no end to the coordination that has to be done. These are practical things. In the online world, it's the same way. I used to play a character in a multi-user dungeon, which is an online Dungeons & Dragons game. When I became a wizard by solving quests and slaying dragons and stealing swords and annoying elves and things like that, and as a player, we would have to coordinate how we would succeed at the quest. When I became a wizard, the wizards were responsible for the actual design and implementation of the MUD. We would create our own quests and things like that. And there's a lot of coordination involved in setting up these environments to do interesting things. And it's a coordination that happens not just with the other designers, but with the players themselves. There's the coordination of the actual building. There's the coordination of testing of the environment. There's the ongoing coordination of the environment, even when it's in play. I want the wizard as a metaphor. So what have we got here? Connector, integrator, facilitator, scheduler, logistics, strong manager, and negotiator. Yes. Examples, program manager or project manager, Alec Koros, yeah. Assistant director, time management, following up, etc. Parent, yeah. 90% of being a parent is being a coordinator. Well, maybe not 90%, but a lot, especially if there's only one car. problem solver. Who does it? Administrators, MOOCs, me, says someone. I coordinate everything for everyone, weddings, parties, students. The SRC advisor, leadership role, IT management, yeah. And then there is an aspect, and it's not something that's really a topic of this discussion, but there is an aspect in which groups are self-organizing. Can groups self-coordinate? That's an interesting question. That's something different. Alex Koros will now be known as the coordinator on Twitter, because that's pretty much his role in ECI 831. So, again, this is one of those blowing up of the educator's role, right? And even the coordination of different things in the educational process is done by different people. There's no Korosinator. That's pretty good. right. Capturing slide. And saving slide. And cropping slide. This is also very mechanical now. Image crop to selection, and that's number 9. We're getting there. This next bit is a big part of being an educator, especially an online educator. Not all online educators are going to do this, but designing is basically the presentation of information or resources in such a way as to make them maximally useful. I sometimes talk of the major elements of design as being relevant, usability, and interactivity, or responsiveness, if you will. And the little designer picture there, if you look really closely, you see he's got little HTML elements, you know, and there's that aspect of designing online now where people are using HTML and CSS and even JavaScript in order to organize the presentation of the information or the learning resources to people. This presentation needs to be, as I said, you know, usable and relevant and responsive, but it also, argue many people, and I think reasonably convincingly, it also has to have educational intent. It has to have the capability of producing the learning result that people are hoping for. The learning result being not merely, of course, the retention of facts, but the actual becoming of a practitioner or an expert in a certain discipline. So what have we got here for definitions? Figuring out the best way to get everything out there. Yeah, that's part of it. Planning things to engage others. I like that, and I like the way engage is circled. The eyes of any organization. That's an interesting remark. That's quite an interesting remark. I have to think about that. Making good spaces, sure. The top of Bloom's taxonomy, okay. Beatician. I don't even know what a beatician is. So, okay. So if somebody can tell me what a beatician is, that would be nice. The one who makes it attractive. Yeah, but attractive is more than just pretty, right? Attractive is engaging, enticing, inviting, utilitarian, functional, effective, not PowerPoint. Well, I don't know. I like PowerPoint, but that's me. Examples, the learning group, curriculum makers, beautician. Okay, beautician is good. Sure, the designer of a person. You know, I think everybody is a designer of their own image, their own self, and I think that's important. Requirements plus wireframes plus branding, okay. Educators, Who does it? Educators, teachers, me, again, and me. A professional designer who understands, I think they're trying to say who understands users, probably. Yeah, planning learning environments. That's the thing about design, right? It's not simply, you know, the way we used to think of it as design being, well, first you show them this, then you show them this, then you give them an activity, then you show them this, then you show them this. It's not that at all. It's presenting an environment in which people can work. Look at the design that I did for this presentation. Basically a bunch of slides with titles, a little cartoon, and three topic areas that you're invited to fill content into. That was design, but it wasn't a sequence of activities. It was an environment that you could work in. In the chat area, Edgar's saying, we design our own PLEs, PLNs. Yes, absolutely. And in the Matrix, there was the designer who created the entire system but allowed for choice. Yeah, and because without choice, without responsiveness of the system, you're not really engaging in any activity and you're not therefore learning. You're just simply watching. I'm going to save this screen now. Print screen. These are great screens, by the way. You guys are doing an excellent job here. I'm really enjoying this. And the last thing I expected was to end up with color pictures, although on reflection, I should have known and expected it, shouldn't I have? Yes. But, okay, crop to selection. Well, you must have seen this one coming, right? The coach. The coach is not an instructor. The coach might instruct. But the coach is something different than that. And the coach isn't a mentor. The mentor's going to come later. You can leave mentor there. But I see those as two separate roles. The coach is, if you will, yeah, somebody's just put it in, the motivator. I wrote way back in prehistory, even before the future of online learning, I wrote a paper, a little short paper called The Triad Model. And the triad model was a picture of instruction where you had three participants who may be located distantly, but typically you'd have two participants in one place and the third participant remotely. The third participant who was remote was the instructor. But the two people located in the same place, well, on one hand you'd have the students, but on the other hand you would have the student's learning facilitator or coach. And the role of this person was to act as an advocate for the students. You know, and I always thought that that's one of the real weaknesses of the system that we have now, is that we do not have a clearly defined role for anyone to advocate for the student. There should be somebody there. And in many online environments now, there is someone there who will actually step you through the process, who will actually help you select the best resources, select the right programs, select the right teachers, who will pick you up when you're down, give you life skills, study skills, nutrition skills, an exercise regimen, all of those sorts of things. Most of all, the coach is the person who's there to be on your side. And that's one of the key, even in sports, you know, one of the key roles of a coach is to be on that person's side, to be on that team's side. So that, you know, there's somebody there who's cheering for you, who will go to bat for you, figuratively, not literally in sports. Who will argue with the umpire for you, who will take being tossed out of the game for you. What have we got on the slide here? Yeah, who started coloring the soccer ball? Soccer balls aren't green, well, except, I guess, in the World Cup. Okay, the person who creates synergy and chemistry in the group. Yeah, that's good. Provides a game plan, a leader, advanced learner, mentor, motivator, facilitator, collaborative team builder, someone who coaches, challenges people to do their best. Absolutely. Examples: guide, guidance counselor, yes. Someone you respect, facilitating student learning, seeing strengths in others and building on them, providing challenges, very important. The most experienced learner in the room. I like that. I don't want to. I don't know. Don't know what that means. Who does it? Student services team, peers. Alex is demonstrating cheerleader, retired hockey players. That's funny. Oh, I don't want to be a coach. Yeah. This is an important point. And that person slowly assembling that sentence. So I'll take a quick sip of coffee here. And something that we really need to understand about being an educator in a PLE world. Nobody does all of this. Nobody can do all of this. It's ridiculous to think of anyone doing all of this. I would make a terrible coach. You know, they want me to work with students and that at NRC, and my reaction is almost right away, I'm not a people person. I'm certainly not a coachy person. Some people are really good at it, and they should do it, but not everyone. And, you know, so, and a lot of teachers got into the profession to do other things, and now people come along and say, now all the teachers have to be a coach. And my reaction to that is so not true. You look at all the other roles that a person could play. I've already shown you 10 of them. We got more to go. It's so not true that everybody has to be a coach. Yeah, we need some coaches, but simply because we need some coaches, from that it does not follow that everyone must be a coach. Who else? Someone who is willing to work with you to fix mistakes and make it better. New teachers. Yeah, that's funny. And experienced teachers, but mostly new teachers. That is funny, but how true it is, isn't it? Lead learner. So, yeah, it takes a special set of skills, a special set of attitudes to be a coach. It's a hard job. And not one I would really wish on people. I love how they gave the guy a plaid shirt. That's hilarious. Okay. Print screen. So I've printed the screen. These diagrams are just killing me. I have a lot more fun than you guys do when I do stuff like this, because I have expectations coming in, and then, of course, it never goes to expectations, and I find that endlessly interesting. Okay. The agitator. This is a very specialized role. Lisa's saying, there I am. Yeah, absolutely. I can name a few others from that course who play that role, too. Agitation is a critical role in education. We settle into comfortable patterns of behavior, beliefs, and expectations. And we need to be shaken up in order to either A, know that these beliefs, patterns, and expectations are sound, or B, settle into more effective. Metallurgy, there's a process known as annealing. And what annealing is heating things up and then cooling them down, heating things up and cooling them down. And what you're doing is basically shaking or agitating the molecules, the atoms inside that mix. And in so doing, making the mixture stronger. In connectionist theory, to learning theory, there's what's called a Boltzmann mechanism. And what that does is it messes around with the probabilities that one neuron will fire off another neuron. And so you can agitate a neural network by making the probability very high that one neuron will fire off another neuron. So what you do is you mess with this probability, turn it to make it very probable that connections will be formed, and then slowly cool it off, slowly make it less and less likely that one neuron will cause another neuron to fire. And in so doing, you get out of these local minima and into the most stable network formations. Agitation works in groups and it works in individuals, again, by shaking up their preconceptions, forcing them to look at problems in a different way, and from my perspective, even more importantly, empowering them to think out of their existing mindset. It's an old, old political tactic to, as they say, extend the playing field. In politics, people generally assume the position that of the two extremes, somewhere in the middle is the correct answer. Haven't you ever heard of that? Or haven't you ever heard that? You know, people are trying to resolve a debate, and they hear the two sides arguing. They say, well, the truth must lie somewhere in between. Well, yeah, that's true. But the way people get you to convince, get you to believe them is they mess around with the endpoints. And what they do is they stake out an extremely radical position, making it more likely that you'll settle at an endpoint, settle to a middle point more toward their side. The agitator messes around with these endpoints. The agitator says things that might not be believed at all by the majority of the community, but extends the space of possible belief to allow that middle point to move. That's what I do a lot. I used to do it a lot more when I actually was a community activist. I'm a lot less of that now. But the idea is to make it possible and legitimate for people to say things that they would not otherwise be allowed to say. The Tea Party movement in the United States is doing that now. Yes, a lot of people, I think correctly, point out that the Tea Party is way out there. But because they're way out there, people focus on the Tea Party people who are way out there and not so much on criticizing people who are not so far out there but are still leaning in that direction. Old strategy. Bye, Vanessa. Thank you for coming. Main element in the washing machine. That's funny. But yeah, you don't get clothes clean without agitating them. The ones who wake up are university risk takers, change agents, questioner, catalyst, make you see a different point of view. I love messing with points of view. Messing with point of view is a lot of fun. Friedrich Nietzsche used to do that. It was a process called the transvaluation of value. And the idea there is you take the inverse of a commonly accepted value and you pretend that that is the commonly accepted value. So suppose, for example, that sharing is a commonly accepted value. Then you take the position that hoarding is in fact the common value and the sharing is the aberration. When you do that, you can create an entire world in which that's consistent. And in that world, it becomes almost impossible, if not impossible, to argue for the original value. And it really makes you question the basis on which you hold that original value. Can you create a world in which murder is the value? Well, a science fiction writer called Robert Sheckley did that in a book called The Status Civilization. Murder was the value, and in that world, you would be very hard-pressed to argue that murder is not a value. Transvaluation of values. Good hit there, Al. Okay, a little off topic there. Examples, pushing the students into their area of discomfort, push the parents into their area of discomfort, or teachers too. Holding people accountable, that's interesting, but yeah. Creating new meaning out of old. Innovator, who does it? The one kid in the room, we all know. I was that kid, I'm sorry to say. Talking about being the one kid. Grade 12, English class, Charles Dickens, little weekly tests to be sure we read the assignments. Guess who boycotted the tests? Right. People who are tired of the status quo. Who is responsible? Why? The one who keeps asking why or how, even after getting the answer. Yeah, people who are ready to take risks. You get the idea. It's certainly a major part of the role of the educator, isn't it? To just push people off those comfortable positions that they find themselves in and make them see the world in a new way. You know, the best... What's the name of the book? Scientific Realism and the Plasticity of Mind, written by a guy called Paul Churchland. He has a wonderful example at the beginning of that book where he takes you out to look at the night sky. And you're out looking at the night sky and the sun is setting and you're looking up at all the stars. He says, find the planets. Well, who can find the planets, right? You might be able to find Venus because it's bright. But then Saturn? But then he points out, and it varies where you are, he shows you how to find the orbital plane. And basically, in the northern hemisphere, it involves looking toward the setting sun and then tilting your head to the right so that you are looking at the sun parallel to where the equator would be. Then all the planets line up nice and neatly. And it becomes dead simple to pick out all the planets. And they're all in order, too, which is really cool. This sort of agitation, just shaking you off the way you always look at things to make you look at new things, or make you look at old things in new ways. Okay, I'm going to save the agitator. Excellent slide filling. Print screen. And we'll go over to... And highlight the area. And, oops. And image, crop to selection, and that's number 12. Well, I guess you probably saw this one coming too. The facilitator, the maker of things to happen. The person who brings the flip chart, the person who brings the whiteboard markers, the person who makes sure there's chairs in the room, the person who makes sure everybody's managed to get into the chat area. Alec is doing some of this. He was away taking care of some of this stuff. I like the last syllable of this word, tour. Coordinator, mentor, curator. Yeah, okay. the person who makes things happen, the person who's there with the resource, or who, if they don't have the resource, make sure that the person who has the resource is there. The person who smooths the process. Facilitation is a role that people play in meetings or in organizations. To smooth the discussion. One of the skills that I learned over the years was Robert's Rules of Order. Robert's Rules of Order, and that's a link for you, Alec. Robert's Rules of Order is an indispensable tool for anyone who manages conversations. And as somebody who programs, I really appreciate Robert's Rules of Order because there's a purpose and a method and a process to Robert's Rules of Order that if you know the rules, any person can be a good facilitator. You don't have to enforce the rules rigorously. Just understanding the principle and how they operate really makes you effective in this role. You need to be a facilitator in order to manage class discussions, and indeed, even to get class discussions off the ground. You need to be a facilitator to manage a discussion board or a mailing list. One of the all-time great facilitators in the history of educational technology was Maury Collins, M-A-U-R-I, Collins. There's a link for you, Alex. Alec, I think she still has a page up there. She used to facilitate the Distance Education Online Symposium, DEOS list. And in the early days of online learning, this was the list where people gathered to exchange ideas. Facilitation is bringing people together. It's engaging people to talk. It's moving the conversation forward. It's asking the right question at the right time and making it possible for people to find the answer or to work together to find the answer for themselves. What have we got on the slide here? Coordinator, mentor, keeps on track and keeps, I imagine it says, keeps it on topic. Something like that. I don't know. It goes off the edge of the slide. Hungry. Tater. That's two syllables, not one syllable. One who opens doors. Very good. That's an excellent one. Make space. Make space comfortable. Make space accessible and open. Catalyst. Yeah, examples. Catalyst, teacher, mediator. Excellent example. That's training that any teacher, any educator can benefit from, is mediation training. Won't go down there too far. Understands process and how to keep people on task. Good point. A non-biased viewpoint guiding the conversation. Yeah, there's this expectation of objectivity, isn't there, in a facilitator? Not all teachers, not all educators want to be objective, and certainly not all educators want to be objective all the time. But there is a role for educators, some educators, sometimes, to take that objective, non-biased point of view to act as the facilitator. The person who makes it possible for students to do the learning, parents, yes. Oh, I like this. The one who can see how to make everyone win. Excuse me. Printing screen. Who knew there were so many roles for an educator in the PLE world? It's a good thing these are not done by the same person, because there's no way, right? Who could have all of those skills? I mean, it's just the things you need to be able to do. Because there are so many different things that you can do, the things that you need to be able to do, the list has just exploded in recent years. Like, here's something that wasn't around 40 years ago. Well, except it kind of was, because somebody had to make the Gestetner run. tech support. Well, you know what tech support is, right? It's the person who makes all the stuff in the learning environment work. Bye, Evram. Thank you for being here. Vodafone customer service. When I was in school, what was it, Gestetner, or you know those things that with the handle and the barrel or cylinder, and you'd put the master on and you'd spin them around and around, and they'd create those like blue ink copies of a document. I used to, in grade 5, I had my own newspaper. It was called the Eagle Report. And I would print the Eagle Report on the Gestetner. And, one of the roles of the educators at that time, in addition to allowing me to do this, and making sure there was paper, was making sure that this machine worked. Otherwise, I could never... Mimeograph. Yeah, that's it. Otherwise, I would never be able to produce my Eagle Report. I used to sell them. I sold them for 5 cents each, and I don't think I ever sold a single copy. But I kept at it for a number of years. Ditto. Ditto. That's it. Ditto. Tech support is something that's always been there, and it's always been an educational role. Lisa Lane did tons of political flyers. Yeah, I believe it. I think we just called it the Ditto Machine. That sounds right. In later years, people made sure the photocopier worked. Librarians still perform that role to this day. Now we have entire departments assigned to tech support, although online instructors are still doing tech support. Alec, I'm sure, can think of all the work that he's done over the years, helping people make sure that they can run Illuminate. How many times, Alec, have you said, use the audio setup tool under the tools manual? That's tech support. that's part of the role of educating. And, you know, it's interesting because when I was talking about, oh, I've forgotten her name, was it Michelle? The person whose paper I cited, Danielle, that's it, whose paper I cited earlier on in this presentation, she's talking about that. Being tech support is an educational function. One of my most interesting experiences was giving a talk in the city of Bloemfontein in the Free State in South Africa. And what we decided to do, silly us, was to use that opportunity to do the world's first educational Skype cast. Skype used to have this feature where, they don't have it anymore, where you could take any Skype input and broadcast that to any number of people. Bluff Pozulu Natal? No, I think you got the wrong place there, Alex. Bloemfontein. B-L-O-E-M Fontein. It's the capital of the Free State. I was at the University of the Free State. Anyhow, so we're trying to set this up. We have it all working perfectly, and then we go to do the talk, and it doesn't work. And so there we are in front of the audience, me and Nico and some other people trying to make this thing work. Yeah, your record as a perfect spoogler has been broken. I'm so sorry. Although I'm sure that's a very useful link. Anyhow, they were very fast, if not accurate. Anyhow, we spent about half an hour making this work. We eventually did make this work and thus did have the world's first educational Skype cast. The world's first Skype cast of a live talk in front of an audience. And what struck me, I did a presentation or just a seminar the next day. And one of the people said that the most interesting part of the talk was the bit at the beginning where they watched us trying to solve the problem. Because we did it all in public, right? We had no choice. I kept people informed. I told them what we were doing. And Nico's running around, plugging this in, plugging that in. And eventually we got it to work. But just the act of solving the technical problem openly allowed people to learn a lot about what it's like to work in this sort of environment. They got a real feel for it. And as the guy said, you know, I see you going through that process. It doesn't bother me so much now when I have to go through that process. Lisa's fascinated at finding old dittos online. Yeah. So I think tech support is actually one of the more interesting and enigmatic roles of an educator, although obviously it's not one that every educator wants to do. Doing a screen capture. Now, I have actually forgotten how many of these I have. So, Alec, if I have to stop, just tell me. Okay. Yeah. I'll wrap up. I'll just go through the others. I'll just like show you what they are. So, because if I was one of the people in the audience, I'd be dying of curiosity to know what all of them are. So I'll go through the rest of them. We're not going to have time to do the talking and the drawing of the pictures. But the moderator, you probably saw that coming too. The critic, that's what I'm good at. The lecturer, that actually is a role, and it's a very valuable role, and we need it. Those videos, all those video lectures are a valuable learning tool. And somebody had to give those lectures. But obviously, not everybody has to give those lectures. The demonstrator, show me how it works. The mentor, this is the model, the inspiration, the person who challenges your thought. Well, yeah, Zeus is everyone's mentor, really, when you think about it, right? The connector. I'm inspired by Zeus, the theorizer, which is a big part of the role that I play. The sharer. Yeah, we weren't going to finish this any time before midnight, were we? the evaluator. And there's one more. Yeah, the bureaucrat. Someone has to enter the data into the system, keep track of the numbers, and pay salaries. So, and then I have two blank slides to wrap up. How about that? So, thanks a lot, everyone. I hope you found this an interesting exercise. You see, now there's people adding to the list already. 1% Yellow says storyteller. You know, and you really could add, I'm going to put these slides online, and I'll think about some way to be able to extend that, but that's all I could do for now. There's like a whole other talk there to do the remaining slides, isn't there? So thanks a lot. I really appreciate your patience. You hung in there for almost 2 hours. I'm really impressed. I appreciate you taking your evening and devoting it to what I had to say tonight.